that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
When you have to stop but don't really want to, stop at BP. Because BP has everything you need to keep it going. Fuel to keep the adventures going. The BP Me app to keep the savings and the commutes going. Snacks and drinks to keep the crew going. And the BP Me Rewards Visa to keep the rewards going and going and going. A stop at BP isn't a stop at all. Keep it going.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Oh, okay. Here we go. I feel like every one of these I do starts with a heavy sigh. Welcome into another post-game edition of the Maize and Brew podcast here on maizeandbrew.com. I am your host, your managing editor, your team site producer, Anthony Broom. And this is one of those games, again, we'll lead it off. Michigan wins in triple overtime against Rutgers by a score of, I forgot what the score even was, 48-42. And throughout much of this game, and I tweeted this very early on in this game, it's just to tweet about the things I was seeing, the things we've been seeing, is to basically just repeat ourselves from the last 3 or 4 weeks. So from that standpoint, I don't have a ton to say coming on here tonight. Now, there are some positives to talk about, and we will. It's also very late. It's 1:30 in the morning. Thanks to, you know, a 5-hour broadcast, we'll do that. Press conferences that go till 1 o'clock in the morning, we'll do that. But I needed some help today, so I enlisted the help of, someone who works probably harder than I do around here lately, Steven Ozentoski. So, Steven, welcome in. Thank you for sharing in, again, whatever that was.
In whatever this is, the misery that is what we're putting ourselves through here. Happy to be here.
I mean, listen, a win is a win is a win. I get that. And this team needed a win in the worst way. Like I said, if you're someone who hates Harbaugh, hates the staff, wants them out of here, I guess maybe you were rooting for a loss tonight. But again, for our sanity, and again, some people would argue that maybe even from a content standpoint, them losing tonight would have been better for us, because it means we get to do the fire Harbaugh stuff. It means we get to do the here's who the candidates are type. For our sanity, they had to win this game tonight. Whether it was 13-9, whether it was 99-98, they had to find a way to get it done. But man, oh man, when has a win ever felt as much like a loss as tonight did? I mean, the nation was having fun in it, but I feel like Michigan fans, by and large, really anyone who watched this game, kind of feels like a little bit of a, I won't say a loser, but 5 hours is 5 hours.
I mean, did anyone other than sickos watch this game? I don't know. If I'm a common fan and I'm watching Michigan versus Rutgers at 12:30 at night, however late this game went, I'm checking in for a doctor's appointment the next day because something's wrong with me if I don't have to watch that game and I choose.
Well, it lasted longer than 4 hours, so we definitely do need to seek some sort of help. But
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah,
I mean,
where do we even start, honestly?
I have a cool stat to start with, and it's okay, not cool. It's sad. So Hassan Haskins' longest run of the day, 25 yards. That's the longest of any running back. And I specifically looked up this stat after that run because something triggered in my brain where I'm like, wow, he's still running. And I couldn't remember the last time a running back had a run of over 20 yards. When do you think the last time Michigan had a run of 20 yards or more?
It had to be the opener, right?
It is. It is. In the past, that's four games now. I mean, you had Michigan State, longest was 19, so you got close, also Haskins, but then nothing even close in the other games to 20 yards. It's just insane. So that's, I mean, well, he established himself, 25 carries, 109 yards.
They picked someone for a change.
Yeah.
That's one of the positives. The other stat, I mean, we talked about how this is their first, long run, explosive run, so to speak, since the opener. This is the first lead they've held since the opener. Michigan hasn't led in a game at all the last 3 weeks. So, again, a win is a win. You'll take it. I mean, we knew coming into this game that Rutgers was improved, at least from a I don't know what they do. I don't know what their identity is, but they do execute it well, and they come in and they play hard, and they are, say what you will about Greg Schiano, they are competently coached now. And that's about what we saw on Saturday night. But again, it's just, well, let's get to the other stuff later. There are people that are tuning into the show. It's a win. We haven't done a post-game win podcast since Minnesota. So people are coming here looking for a bit of serotonin. So let's start with the positives.
Sure.
It's Cade McNamara, right? What were most impressed with what you saw from him tonight?
Well, I don't want to kind of move it towards a negative, but at least the staff appeared more comfortable with an offense that resembled closer to what we saw in the season opener, where we saw some actual RPOs. I think the first play for McNamara was an RPO, and I have been struggling in the analysis to find things that were clear RPOs with Joe Milton. So the offense just came alive a bit under Cade McNamara, and that's what you like to see. I think the running game opened up as a result of some of those nice passes that McNamara was having. I think an issue with the run game, I think a lot of people have complained about the running back rotation, and I think that's warranted. It's hard when you get behind the sticks. And there was a play in my game notes where I just had, I usually put yes or no if I'm going to review it later. And I have a 3 or 4 yard check down pass from Cade McNamara where I put in all caps yes, check down. And that's just not something that I feel like Joe Milton really did. He didn't come off of his main read down to the check down where there were opportunities for that. So he made things on offense look easy for an offense that hasn't looked like that for a couple of weeks. And that's a win. That's how things are supposed to look. And he took care of the ball. There were no instances of him putting the ball in danger, and he just made it a more efficient unit overall. Now, I think the offensive line helped him out a lot with that, with the run game, but it's all connected, right? The passing game will open up the run game, and it at least looked like an offense that was forming an identity, which is something that has been lost for sure. As long as I can remember the past few weeks.
There's something to be said about, again, it's simple stuff. It's very, very the basic fundamental things about playing the quarterback position and moving the football is that sometimes, you had an issue with the QB sneak stuff. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but there are a lot of times in this game or this season in general, where Michigan makes it look so hard to just get 1 yard, Yep. And that's incumbent upon the blocking up front, the play calling, the guy who's getting the ball, just executing it. As it pertains to Cade McNamara, there's something to be said about just running the offense and doing what you're asked to do. I thought they did a nice job getting him in rhythm. I don't think we've really, you've really been in the film more than I have over the last month or so. It seemed, I don't really think we've seen much of the quick slants in the offense at all. I think when that's the easiest way, from my Madden playing brain, you're trying to get any quarterback into a rhythm. It comes with being decisive and quick with the football. And I thought that certainly helped them. And again, it's just like you said, knowing what touch to put on the ball, and again, we're not calling him Baker Mayfield. We're not doing any, at the end of the day, and I hate to say this because here's another stat for you. In the five games under Jim Harbaugh against Rutgers, Michigan has only surrendered a total of, coming into tonight, only a total of 36 points. Tonight they gave up 42. Again, there were a couple overtimes, but still it was 35 all going into the overtime period. So again, this is an improved Rutgers team, but again, it's still Rutgers. Yeah, not that improved. So just really, I guess, impressed that they were able to go. But here's the thing with Joe, and that's the kind of the elephant in the room, is what happened with Joe Milton. And people say, well, what have they been seeing in practice all this time? I know it was a month ago. It feels like it was 2 years ago. 4 weeks ago, Joe Milton came out, and against a bad Minnesota defense, albeit, came out and ran, again, what we just talked about, ran the offense, took what the defense gave him. And, it's still clear. I'll still say it. He's the higher upside guy in that quarterback room right now. And I think what this staff has been kind of leaning on is that, we don't really know what we are yet. We don't really know what he does well yet, but we feel like if he pops, he's really going to pop and be a superstar. And that just hasn't happened. At a certain point, even up until I was still on board, even up until last week, but you come out, you throw two picks right off the bat. Again, I know he's doesn't have a ton of game experience, but it's his third year in the program, 5 weeks into a season where, again, it's almost December. So at this point you kind of are what you are. So that's kind of put a bow on it, how I feel about the quarterback situation right now.
Yeah. I mean, at a certain point you believe in a guy, and with how much work Joe Milton is, it's like a good story on how hard he's worked to get to this point, but at a certain point you got to win games. Yeah. And I think the thing I'll be looking for most in the film analysis this week are opportunities for pre-snap reads, because that's probably an area where Cade McNamara would make things easier based off of that. Like, he's just prepared for the alignments, the fronts that Rutgers were giving him, and Milton just wasn't able to do that. That's just like my hunch of why it looks so much easier. But he didn't need to be a world beater again. And I'm still a little skeptical, because it's not all on McNamara here. If the run game didn't get going, I know it was still it was under 150 yards total, which with two overtimes, it's still not great, but there was at least chunks. There were at least second and manageables. And we haven't seen that for Joe Milton the past couple games. I feel like I have to hold myself back still here, because the past few games, I feel like Michigan was held under 50 yards total rushing. So even having close to 150 yards, that opens up a lot for your quarterback, regardless of whether his name is Joe Milton or Cade McNamara. So I think that plays a huge role. And we won't learn next week, but I'm sure in a couple of weeks here, Cade McNamara is going to be expected to hold a heavier load than, I think he did really well today, but there's still a lot to dig in there.
Yeah. And we talk about how, again, offense is kind of a symbiotic thing where every unit plays into the success of the other unit. At some point in the first half, Michigan ran the ball 15 times for 17 yards. So really it did take for Cade McNamara and the passing game to get cooking a little bit for things to start opening up there. And then we saw, Hassan Haskins kind of do his thing. And I think that's kind of segueing into something I took as another positive, is that I think it's pretty decisive who your best quarterback is right now. It's obviously decisive who your best running back is right now. If you just go by the snaps tonight. I think that at wide receiver, you know, Ronnie Bell's up there, but I think Cornelius Johnson might be your best wideout right now. Like, we thought they had so many, you know, they've got what, four or five running backs. They've got five or six guys at wide receiver. I think the last few weeks, really, what, even going back to the Indiana game with the wide receivers, I think you've seen, you know, a group of two or three guys at wideout that to me looks like you might have something there.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Cornelius Johnson. I think he will establish himself a little bit more as a downfield threat just because you have to with kind of just how the roster shakes out. My favorite thing about wideouts this game was Chris Evans. I don't remember the last time he ran a slant. It was fourth down. I think he picked up that slant pickup. Yep. And I mean, that was something out of high school. I remember his recruiting profile was, you know, truly all purpose guy who had some hands on him, and he really displayed that. And if Michigan can split him out more and that opens up more snaps for, you know, I do think Haskins is at this point your number one, but Corum has a great burst. He showed that on a couple of snaps today. I still think Charbonnet has a role that he can carve out. So to get Evans elsewhere involved, just adds to those weapons. It was strange. I didn't see AJ Henning that much. I know Roman Wilson had a couple targets, nothing a whole lot I can remember, but I love Ronnie Bell, man. His blocking as well has been shaky the past few weeks from my analysis, but he picked it up today. There were some plays, especially towards the latter part of the game on a few screens that they ran where he came up huge. So that's huge for an offense that needs those outside plays like that, where how many like screens the past couple of weeks have been blown up for a loss and you're in, you know, second and nine, second and 10, and it just doesn't help. And it doesn't give any confidence for the staff to run those. But I feel like a lot of those plays were blocked well tonight, and that helps set everything else up. So that's good to see.
Any other positives before we have to do a quick read here, and then we'll get into the negative stuff. So
Are we sticking to offense? Because I have some defensive positives.
I'd like to hear some defensive positives.
So I thought Reynolds...
Please find them somewhere for me.
I thought Reynolds outplayed Hawkins, and I don't think it was close. Like, if Hawkins is able to come back, you know, safety depth is always important, but Reynolds had a really good bracket coverage where he came over the top on a guy that Daxon Hill was covering. There were two plays that I marked down against Pacheco, running back for Rutgers, that I really like, on the edge, where Reynolds really set the edge well, fought off a stiff arm as well in a critical second down to bring up third and short. So he was decisive. He wasn't like, he didn't stick out in a bad way, and he flashed on a couple plays, and that's exactly what you want to see out of safety. And there were times that Daxon Hill struggled in this game, so having Reynolds, you could argue, outplay Daxon Hill. So coming off the bench and having that kind of performance, and Shibley as well coming in for a hurt McGrone, both those guys, I think stepped up, in really important ways.
Any other positives on defense?
I'm done.
Cut it off. All right. Well, before we get into some of the negatives on both sides of the ball, because there are some, I want to talk about our friends over at Home Field Apparel. Again, right now, if you're watching us on Twitch, rocking the old school Michigan crew neck. Any of you guys that have been listening to our shows and podcasts know that Home Field out of Indianapolis are our favorite Hoosiers. They're probably number one on the Hoosier power rankings, but they're a smaller business, a growing business. We've been in a partnership with them. They launched their Michigan line a couple weeks ago, and again, like I said, I'm wearing the crew neck right now. I have t-shirts. It is like being, it's the type of comfort and cuddling that you need after 5 hours of Brady Hoke-esque era football. So again, right now they are running their Black Friday promotion, they're starting it a week early so they can start fulfilling some of these orders for you guys. Get them in before the holidays, get them in the next couple of weeks or so. I get 30% off their entire site using their promo code HomeFieldMagic. So that's homefieldapparel.com. We're big fans of Connor and the team and all the work they're doing over there. So again, shout out to those guys, and that's where we're at.
I need to track down my UPS guy. I've I think two or three, that exact shirt you're wearing right now, the sweatshirt. And then there's two other that were supposed to show up today. And I don't blame home field. I blame UPS or
UPS and USPS are under a lot of stress.
That's true. I just want to be, I just need the comfort. I just need the comfort right now. You know,
I'm telling you, I'm so tired right now as we sit here and do this. I could fall asleep in this. It's that comfortable. So.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
So, let's talk about negatives, of which, again, I'm just going to let you start because I have some things to say, but I want to hear maybe a sounder, more analytical brain than mine go through it first.
I mean, I hate to drill down into like just a detail, but there are just little details where they just drive me crazy.
Can we start with this? Like, this is a... Regardless of what we saw on Saturday, nothing has changed from the last few weeks in that this is a poorly it's a poorly coached football team that fails doesn't fail in every area, but makes even the most finite details look like it's brain surgery or rocket science. It blows my mind. They make it so much harder on themselves than it needs to be. And I feel like what you're going to cite here soon is the short yardage QB runs. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that first.
Yeah, that was going to be the first one. And we saw it last week against Indiana, fourth and goal from the inches. And I had people in my mentions saying like, oh, like Michigan just doesn't run under center anymore. Like Michigan just doesn't do that. That's just not part of their thing. Teams have trick plays. They have trick plays. Why can't a QB sneak be just like a changeup? Like just come out in shotgun, audible to under center, and then just plow through. It's not hard. I'm sure these guys are capable of doing it. And I haven't seen any reasonable explanation why it's not a good job. There was a play I remember watching on Twitter where a guy took the ball from under snap, a fullback just ran right into the back of him and he got like 4 yards on a QB sneak. And there's no excuse, no reason why that wouldn't work. And we saw against Indiana, there are multiple cases in this game where I saw it was like third and inches or fourth and inches. I'm like, this should be a no brainer. Like it should not even be a question.
Especially, you know, with the quarterback that you had in at the time is 6'5" or 6'4", 6'5", 250.
You fall forward, man. Fall forward. And if you really want to, if I just don't understand why you don't do that. And if you need, like, if you don't even have any confidence in your, you know, freshman center and your young interior offensive line, get Ben Mason to shove from behind. That's a legal play. I just, to have it third, it was third and goal. And to not immediately go to, oh, we got two plays here. Let's QB sneak under center. To not do that, that's the first issue. The second issue is they snap it to the quarterback and he runs from shotgun. So it's not like an aversion to running with your quarterback or anything like that. It's like we need him to take it in a shotgun and then do the same thing that would be a shorter path if it were under center. So I just it boggles the mind.
The quarterback that they had that they would have had to run that play out of the shotgun is not currently on the roster right now. He's opted out. I feel like that's a Dylan McCaffrey thing. I mean, really, just the The insistence on early downs to run to the interior in general, I think, was again another big issue this week. Again, it opens up in the second half, of course, when you're able to have some success throwing the ball. But man, oh man, like it seems like, and this could be totally uneducated of me to say, but it just seems like there is this, the word I keep using is hubris. There is this hubris about them that we've been working on this. We've seen it work in practice. We're just going to go out there and keep hammering away, and eventually it's going to work. And it doesn't. It doesn't work. So, again, it's hard to, I don't know. I was going to say it's hard to complain about a game where you put up 35 points offensively, you know, in regulation. But again, you were down 17-0 in this game. And again, your quarterback, like they did the right thing, because honestly, if they stick with Joe Milton, and Joe Milton wasn't even playing that poorly, but you needed a spark, you needed something, you know, you needed something to come from somewhere.
Yeah. And last week was Joe Milton is not playing well enough. We need someone else in here.
Yeah.
Or like you could say Joe Milton was playing bad last week. In this week, it was, we're just not getting anything with Joe Milton. Like, it's just not working. Like, it's not like he's playing necessarily poorly. We just need something different. We just need to try elsewhere.
How do we feel about him getting the start? I think a lot of us felt this week that it was kind of going to be like, again, against a Rutgers thing from a few years ago, John O'Korn. If John O'Korn comes into this game and can't get it done against Rutgers, then yeah, we need to make a change. Were you cool with that? Or do you think that they got lucky that, you know, the game that Cade was able to lead them back?
Yeah, it was tough because what was it? Michigan's first drive where they fumbled after what was looking like a nice drive. And then Cornelius Johnson fumbled after a slant catch there. So that was a case where I was like, all right, the offense looked like it was moving. But I think it was, again, the case where they had five straight possessions with no points. I mean, Michigan's offense the past four games averages 8 points in the first half. I don't care how elite your defense is, you're just not going to do anything with that. So I think going into the game, I'm okay with Joe Milton starting. It was a case where he needed to have an extremely short leash. I thought after the first possession where they, again, were down in Rutgers zone, turnover, not his fault. It was a good place ball, would have been close to the red zone. I would have given him another possession there, maybe two, after like the two subsequent possessions that didn't generate any points. Then I'm switching in Cade McNamara. So I think it was just, it was late for me, where it wasn't a case where I need to wait until Joe Milton does bad to get McNamara in there. I was in the position where if Milton's not getting it done, I'm going to put in Cade and see if he can get it done, and then just roll with the hot hand. And it wasn't that. It was still kind of like Milton has to play poorly enough to play McNamara. And that seemed like the plan going into this game. And I don't really agree with that, but yeah. I mean, credit to McNamara. I mean, Michigan was down 17-0, and you know, outside of the Giles Jackson special teams touchdown, which was huge, you know, it was Kate McNamara who came back, and I think he outscored Rutgers like 42-28 himself compared to when Milton was in.
It was prior to that last drive, Michigan had outscored Rutgers 35-10 before Rutgers drove down the field and tied the game. So again, offense did its part for, when was that switch made? Maybe halfway through the second quarter, early in the second quarter. I think it was late. It was pretty late, probably about halfway through. And again, I said that Milton wasn't playing that bad, but I think he was like one for his last eight or something like that. So it was definitely time. Again, it felt like it was a little bit too late. I felt like they were really kind of playing with fire, like seeing how far can we get down to Rutgers before we feel like we have to make a change here. And again, I don't know. I think that's kind of, any other negatives about the offense? I feel like we've plowed through there, I think, pretty thoroughly so far.
Yeah, I don't think on offense. No.
All right. Well, let's talk about the elephant in the room. Don Brown should not be allowed to come home from Jersey. I don't know how far Cape Cod is from there, but I'd be leaving him on the tarmac tonight. I mean, what, for the fourth week in a row, whatever it is, I ask, what the hell was that?
It's insane how many quarterbacks have just career days.
I'm old enough to remember where Don Brown defenses were knocking out quarterbacks, and we were seeing the second stringers in almost every game.
Oh yeah,
it was especially against Rutgers.
It was at the point where it's like,
I think poor Arthur Sitkowski is still somewhere at the 50-yard line at the Big House.
Like, yeah, it was at the point where like I feel like people had to get some knowledge on the second string quarterback, because it was like something like three straight games that Michigan had taken out the starting quarterback, just with the amount of pressure and just the amount of, I mean, Michigan had some elite defensive lines back in the day, like three years ago. But yeah, that's not what's happening. I mean, he put up 381 yards, three touchdowns. I mean, he had a pick, but that was just at the end of the game. He had overall, yeah, this was a career day for Vidral without
it close. Has he ever come close to throwing 200 yards in his career? I'm not as familiar with him as I probably should have been, but
I'm not a Vidral guy, but who was doing like any scouting on Vidral coming into this game? Like it's insane, because I mean, you go back to Penix is a good quarterback, so that's fine. Same with Mertz.
Penix balled out at Ohio State. Yeah. So I mean, that's, he's for real. So you tip your hat there, but
yeah,
again,
you look at Rocky Lombardi, where he's on the bench now. That he had his career day. He will have, like, that game against Michigan for him was the Jalen Watts Jackson. He'll be remembered for nothing but that Michigan game. And Michigan's just made it a trend now to give guys just a career day. Yeah. And
again, I know the injuries, no Quiddy Pay, no Aiden Hutchinson. I get it. Cameron Grown gets carted off the field. Who knows how long he's done? Ambry Thomas opted out. Brad Hawkins gets injured. But it's like, to me, I know they've lost a lot, but they don't even look prepared out there. I mean, they got a couple stops, but again, it's Rutgers. I have no idea what to expect out of the Penn State game next week, but Maryland looks explosive offensively. And obviously we know what looms, you know, that last week of the year. So I'm just at this point, does it get any better? I mean, I don't see it, man. That's why I needed you today, or else this would be 15 minutes or 20 minutes or a half hour of what is this? Does it get, I'm asking questions to myself here. It's painful. And there are no fixes for it this year. I think you just kind of, I mean, at this point, if you're going to be bad, I'd rather than be bad with the young guys out there playing. I'd like to see, again, I don't know what's going on with guys like DJ Turner, Jalen Perry, Andre Selden. Makari Page got a little bit of run tonight towards the end of the game. But like I said, Chris Hinton is coming on a little bit. Other than that, I mean, there is no pass rush. Regardless of if Aiden Hutchinson or Quiddy Pay are out for the next, I mean, if they're out the rest of the year, they're not back next year, whatever. Where's this pass rush coming from next year? I don't see those guys waiting in the wings either. I mean, as of a couple of years ago, you're going through this where this is a unit that can go eight or nine deep, you know, up front along the defensive line, and you go, okay, that guy's not playing a ton, but you know he's going to start next year. I have no idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
The scary thing is, you're right, there is like no real guys in the wings where you're like, oh, he just needs to bulk up, he just needs this. Everyone is pretty much who they are, outside of like, we haven't really seen Mazi Smith, which at this point is a little alarming. And I am high on Welshoff, but like, I don't know if he'll ever be like a true defensive tackle. Like, he struggled against a Wisconsin team that lost to Northwestern today. Granted, Northwestern was somewhat impressive. But like, again, like you said, there's no one that's like waiting in the wings to emerge, and you're losing like some veterans that you have as kind of just like your safety net in Kemp and Jeter. I mean, I assume they'll be gone. Technically, they could probably stay, and they might have to because of just how the roster's looking. But I mean, that's a bleak position, because even at the defensive end spot, you're losing to what probably could have been all Americans on a better team. And I think Upshaw might be able to get there. Villain is, you know, still just not really there. There's, again, everything I'm saying, I feel like I'm just like moving my, like, I feel like a bobblehead. Cause I'm just like, well, I don't know. Like there's, I'm waffling. There's no like, yeah, he's going to be something. It's like, they might become serviceable. And that's a really scary spot when you want to be competing for anything other than what, where's Michigan, third to last in the Big Ten East.
Yeah. And we know that college football isn't like, you can get away with being just average defensively in college football if your offense is lights out, but Michigan's offense is not that. And quite frankly, they're still pretty far away from that, regardless of what we saw tonight in 2.5 quarters of football. So again, I don't know what the fix is there. I know that if this staff, or, you know, if Jim Harbaugh's still around and they're able to hold on to this recruiting class that they have coming in for next year, I think a lot of those guys are going to play early. At least it looks that way. Again, I think overall thoughts as we kind of wind down here. Again, I come out of this game like there's nothing to me. There's nothing new to take away from it other than the positives we talked about. At least they might be watchable now with the Cade McNamara stuff, seeing how those guys develop on that side of the ball. But I don't feel any different about this team than I did last week, the week before that, in terms of the outlook moving forward, if in terms of what needs to happen with this staff, if Jim Harbaugh should still be around. Again, I'll say it. I'm of the opinion that he should not be coaching this team after this year. And it's probably might be a natural time for everyone to kind of, you know, move on and say goodbye. Again, can they do anything to make, I don't know if they can really do it. Sans beating Ohio State, which them looking like they have throughout most of this year and then pulling that out of their rear end, I don't even know if, I mean, it would be great to have, but again, what happened in the weeks that preceded it, that it's past 2 o'clock. My brain is totally fried.
It would almost make people more upset if Michigan somehow pulled that game out against Ohio State in this year where everything is dead. There's nothing on the line and Michigan just pulls a rabbit out of their butt and does that. Like it would almost be a meltdown in crying of relief and also just like, wow, do it when it matters. So you'd see both sides.
Listen, I mean, Ohio State is not going to sleepwalk in that game.
No.
It feels like they've sleptwalked through their last couple games, and Justin Fields played the worst game he'll probably play at any level of football on Saturday, and Ohio State still won. It was close at the end, but still beat Indiana somewhat handily. So again, the pact with Lucifer that Ohio State has is just so draining on me.
I have a random note that I found that I have to share. Michigan ran play action with 27 seconds left in this game with two timeouts remaining when they had first and 10 on their own 30 something yard line. And this was at the end of the game.
Yep. I know. Oh, gross.
And like, God. What, like in what world? And I had someone in my mentions trying to say, well, maybe they thought Michigan was going to run out the clock. Like the safeties are going to be flying up at a play action with 27 seconds in the fourth quarter in a tied game. And that's like that perfectly summed up. I wrote like a half paragraph in my notes after that play where it's like, this is just a perfect encapsulation of why it just isn't working. Because in what world is that an appropriate thing you do in that situation? No one in their right mind would call that. And that bleeds everywhere into any other coaching decision. If someone is capable of doing that or not having a QB sneak package, how can I trust them to make the correct coaching hires, the correct player personnel, the correct recruiting choices? And it's just lost. The trust is lost.
If this was 2015 or one of the first years where everyone's still figuring it out, you can talk yourself into that a little bit more. Again, I feel like a broken record saying this. It's year six. Yeah. And honestly, a lot of the football that's being played right now looks worse than what the tail end of the Brady hoax stuff was. It really does. I mean, tonight was a game ripped right out of the 2013-2014 season. It really was. And I don't know how you, I honestly don't know how you get that back. So I don't know, man. It's a win's a win. It's good that you did just about everything you could to be the butt of the jokes tonight, but at least you got the win. So yeah. Hats off to that. But
sure.
I don't feel anything other than shame for what we just watched.
It feels gross.
It's yeah, honestly, I showered before the game. I might shower before I go to bed here. It's not a good feeling. Especially like we knew a step back was coming this year, but this is the three games before this week, they weren't competitive outside of Michigan State, which was, again, that game was closer at the end than the score indicates as well. And then Rutgers. What else is there to be said about that? It's just,
I don't know. It's another game where it's a first time coach. I mean, he's coached Rutgers before, so don't get that mixed up, but it's a new coach coming into a team in a COVID year with really a roster that he hobbled together with a lot of grad transfers. And you go back to Michigan State, same thing there with Mel Tucker, first guy in a year, in just like a year that has no spring, no fall camp.
I was about to make a really stupid joke. I was going to say, would anyone on Rutgers start for Michigan? And I was like, oh wait, I thought of a couple guys, Michael Dwumfor and Drew Singleton.
Yeah, exactly. Dwumfor flashed.
Yeah. And he played really well.
It made me so sad. That was like, I mean, we could have a whole different podcast about like Dwumfor chose to play for Rutgers.
Yeah.
And he probably could have done pretty well at Michigan. And Dylan McCaffrey chose not to play for Michigan and play nowhere else. And what does that tell you about those guys?
Sometimes I wonder too, like this is hindsight now, and we all know what the saying is about that, but you know, for a lot of these other teams, Rondale Moore, Rashad Bateman, obviously all the Ohio State guys, these guys opted back in when it became clear the season was coming back, and Michigan's guys were just like, nope, we're out, deuces. Yeah. So maybe, again, we've been hearing about how apparently these are some of the best practices in the history of the game that have been going on, but maybe those guys were seeing it and going, you know what, I don't know how much I can help this team. So I don't know. It's just a negative. I'm trying not to be negative after a win, but again, you said it, you put it best. It feels gross. So do you have any final thoughts about it? Or what next week? Can we just get this out of the way? Have it be a noon game?
Oh, please. Can we have it be like a 5 a.m. game? And then I wake up and I only have like 30 minutes to suffer through.
Or how about I wake up and it's over and I missed it? Oh, that would be ideal.
There's an idea. Final thoughts? I don't think so. I had a fleeting thought, but it missed the uprights, kind of like the three field goals we attempted today.
The irony of was it with Nordin as he's running off the field after the missed field goal, yelled at someone, do your job, and then missed what, two more and the one in overtime. So I think that, let me say this, the missed field goal in overtime was probably the darkest place I've ever gone to in terms of like, oh my God, like in terms of pure Michigan football embarrassment. Cause that's, you missed the field goal in that first overtime. You're like, holy, like it's over. Like it's done. But whatever the other kicker's name for Rutgers, Guglielmento Versaccio, I don't know, something Italian, missed his and the game was extended. So I don't have any more thoughts. So I suppose I could wrap this up now. Where can the people find you on the social, Steven?
You can find me at Steven Toski. That's really the only one I'm at. I should get an Instagram at some point. I do, but I don't use it. So,
well, Twitter
at Steven Toski.
Twitter's basically Instagram now with the fleets, whatever you call it. So,
yeah, that's true.
All right. You can follow me on Twitter at Anthony T. Broom. Follow the website at Mason Brew. We're on all the socials. We're on everywhere you get your shows, Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher. Thanks to Steven for joining me tonight. Michigan wins 48-42, a triple overtime thriller in Piscataway. Michigan moves to 2-3 on the year. We'll take on 0-5 Penn State next weekend in Ann Arbor. So should be a real barn burner there. So for Steven, I'm Anthony. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.